The second Corinthians is very, very much like listening to one side of a telephone conversation. I'm sure you've done that, where you hear what is being said, and you try to guess what are the questions that are being asked, or the statements that are being made, or the situation that is being described. You have done that kind of thing. And sometimes you're right, and sometimes you're not so right. My wife was on the phone with our friends the last hour or so before we left, and I was trying to pick up something of what was going on. It didn't sound good, and it obviously wasn't good. But if you ever try to do that kind of thing, you know that it's a little bit of a guessing game as to what's going on until you get off the phone. Well, 2 Corinthians is very much like that, very much like that. You just don't quite know what has been going on in Corinth, because all you hear is Paul's responses and Paul's answers and Paul's whatevers. And so you kind of have to take an educated guess as to what the criticisms were, what the issues were, what the disagreements and the conflict was all about. And so you have to end up being a little bit tentative. You can't be real dogmatic about it, but you are listening to one half of a flow of conversation. And I think that's an honest way to look at this book, in particular, since 2 Corinthians is such a personal book and since it deals with such an ongoing conflict between Paul and these folks. And he's trying to communicate to them his heart, his love, etc. And you just don't know what has gone on in the past and what's how they have responded, etc. So just that said, I'll try not to say that too many times, but there's some tentativeness here I want you to know for that reason. The other thing, I think I said this last week, but I may not have said it well enough. Paul is defending himself. And if you've ever had to defend yourself for whatever reason, you know that it's very easy for you to be misunderstood all the more. And I think it's possible for us to misunderstand Paul's defense, thinking of him as being simply defensive because he has hurt feelings. Like somehow Paul wants to get back into the good graces of the folks at Corinth. And he just can't stand the notion of there being some distancing or some misunderstanding of him personally. And thus you have this defense in 2 Corinthians. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Paul is not wanting just to stay on the good side of these people. His defense of himself and of his apostleship and of his motivations and of his travels and all these things that come into light, his defense is not because he is personally hurt or wanting to simply maintain a friendship. It is much more because he has this tremendous concern and he is longing for this whole conflict to be resolved so that the church itself will not be destroyed or hurt. Remember, please, you have not just Corinthian believers who are questioning and so on, but you have these enemies of Paul, these detractors, as I like to call them, and others call them. And these detractors want to detract these people from Paul and gain a following for themselves, and that would be destructive to the church. These folks, as we shall see, were emissaries of Satan, and they were false teachers, and they had only very selfish ends in mind, and Paul was very concerned about that, for the doctrinal integrity, the spiritual health, the centrality of the gospel and the person of Christ. Paul was engaging in this book, in this defense, not for himself personally and his own hurt, but for the good of the Corinthians themselves and the future of the church. And I think that's an important distinction here. I think there probably are times in life when we do have to defend ourselves, perhaps even over personal hurt, etc. I'm not suggesting that that's a wrong or inappropriate thing to do. I think there are times it has to be done. But in a churchly setting, in a pastoral setting, the real concern is for the group, not for my or the individual personal feelings. So all of that kind of warm up to, okay, what are the issues anyway? What are the points of conflict that we are going to be dealing with? And again, this is kind of an overview, a look at the entire book. So I've divided it into three parts. Number one, the issues from the vantage point of the Corinthians themselves. And then secondly, the issues from Paul's perspective. And then finally, the issues, especially with regard to these detractors. So I just want to just quickly talk about those three areas of conflict. Again, the issues from the Corinthians themselves. Here they are. Number one, they were basically saying, Paul, you really don't love us. They were questioning his affections, his love. And part of the reason that they were questioning it is because Paul had said, I'm going to return, and he didn't. And they were saying, you know, if you really loved us, you'd be here. You'd show up. And it also appears, notice that wording, it also appears that his detractors were making some hay out of the fact that he was not returning. And they were basically saying, well, not just that he doesn't love you, but the reason he doesn't show up is because he's afraid. He's afraid to come back. He writes powerful letters, but in his physical presence, he's a wimp. And so, you know, if he really loved you, he'd be here. But the fact that he changed his plans, we'll see that, he's not here. He doesn't really love you. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, we can use as at least illustrative of this. 2 Corinthians 2, 3, he said, and I wrote this very thing to you, lest when I came, I should have sorrow over those from whom I ought to have joy, having confidence in you all that my joy is the joy of you all. For out of much affliction and anguish of heart I wrote to you with many tears, not that you should be grieved, but that you might know the love which I have so abundantly for you. Again, listening to this one half of this telephone conversation, you read into this, you know, they've been saying, you know, Paul, why didn't you come? You really don't love us. And he's saying, well, as we'll see this next week, Lord willing, the real reason I didn't come was because I do love you. Sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? A couple other references I want to give you about this love thing. We just don't have time to read them all. I wish I did, but I just don't. Chapter 6, verse 11, he says essentially the same thing. Chapter 11, verses 5 to 12, and chapter 12, verses 14 and 15. If you were taking, some of you are taking notes, so I'll give you those for your notes. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, 6, 11, 11, 5 to 12, and 12, 14, 15. I'll treat you like we're in a college classroom here. Look at chapter 12, just that last one for a moment. I'll just read it for you. 2 Corinthians 12, beginning at verse 14. He says, now for the third time, I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not seek yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And he was their spiritual parent. I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls, though, interestingly here, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. Can you feel the pain in that? Can you feel the affirmation? I love you. But the more I love you, the less you love me. So you sense here this issue over love. The second issue, from their perspective, was Paul's motives, Paul's motivation. Why in the world are you doing what you're doing? And I'm going to give you a series of references here again. Chapter 1, verses 12 through 14. Chapter 4 and verse 2. And again, chapter 12, verses 11 to 13. I'll say those again. Chapter 1, verses 12 to 14. Chapter 4, verse 2. And chapter 12, verses 11 to 13. Since we're right at 12, or we were, I'll just look at that. Chapter 12, verse 11. I hope I'm not going too fast here. 12:11. Notice what he's talking about here. I have become a fool in boasting, but you have compelled me. For I ought to have been commended by you, for in nothing was I behind the most eminent apostles, although I am nothing. Truly, the signs of an apostle were accomplished among you with all perseverance, in signs and wonders and mighty deeds. For what is it in which you were inferior to other churches, except that I myself was not burdensome to you? Forgive me this wrong. Now that may sound like so much gobbledygook to you, and you do have to read the whole book and kind of listen to that one half of the conversation. But what's going on there, basically, is that Paul is saying, now look, and I'm jumping ahead here, I know. I'm really disappointed in you. You know me well enough to have defended me to my detractors, and you didn't do it. And now I have to. I'm disappointed in you. He goes on here to hint at something that he's stated before. He says, I am not going to take a salary from you because I don't want to be a burden to you. And they could not understand that. It's like, why in the world would you take money from Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea and those folks in Macedonia, the northern part of Greece? Why would you allow them to support you and you won't take any money from us? There's something screwy going on here, Paul. We don't understand that. Isn't our money good enough for you? I'll not try to resolve that. I just want you to think about that. That was a motivational thing. Paul, why won't you take pay from us? And remember what I said last week. When people start asking you why questions, it's kind of a little hint that they're not trusting you. Why are you doing this? Why did you say that? Why didn't you do the other thing? They're questioning his motivations. Third issue for them, they were questioning his authority as an apostle. His authority as an apostle. That was a biggie. I'm just going to give you chapter 10, verse 7 to 11. They questioned his authority as an apostle. Now, the problem with that was that if you question his authority as an apostle, you're really questioning the message of the gospel, the message that he carried as an apostle. He even hinted at it in that chapter 12 reference I just made, where he talks about, I am not far behind the most eminent of the apostles. And you get the impression that his detractors were saying to them, or else they, the Corinthians themselves, were saying, you know, Paul, there are apostles and there are apostles. And there are some biggies and important ones and accomplished, eminent ones, and then there's you. Wow. That was a real strike. I better read to chapter 10, verse 7 here. Do you look at things according to the outward appearance? If anyone is convinced in himself that he is Christ, let him again consider this in himself, that just as he is Christ, so even so are we Christ's. For even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, now there's our word, even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, which the Lord gave us for edification and not for destruction, I shall not be ashamed, lest I seem to terrify you by letters. For his letters, they say, that is these detractors, for his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when we're absent, such we will be also indeed when we are present. It's like, you question my authority, you may experience it when I show up. I don't know who these detractors were. No, we just don't know that. And I don't know who these preeminent or eminent apostles are that they had in mind. We just don't know. And commentators differ. And they're all over the map on the thing. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Perhaps what matters is that a spiritual leader, a pastor, needs to have a solid understanding of his call to ministry and of what the Lord expects of him. And he is not able, honestly and helpfully, he is not able to compare himself with other ministers. Because comparison leads inevitably either to a sense of superiority, I'm better than, or inferiority, I'm less than, and in either case, you're history. And that's kind of what these folks were doing with Paul. Get him to compare. Finally, the last issue I'll mention at least, is a question about Paul's influence. It's kind of tied to his authority, but not quite the same. Paul's influence, chapter 10, verses 14 to 18. Chapter 10, verses 14 to 18. I'll read again. For we are not overextending ourselves as though our authority did not extend to you. For it was to you that we came with the gospel of Christ, not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors, but having hope that as your faith is increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you in our sphere. Notice that. Our sphere of authority, our sphere of influence. He says, I want that to happen, verse 16, so as to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you, and not to boast in another man's sphere of accomplishment. But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. You get the impression that Paul was being told, you have overstepped your bounds. You should have stayed to the east of Corinth. You could have stayed in Asia. You could have stayed in Israel and so on. But you had no business coming west to Corinth. And you've kind of overreached and overstepped your boundaries. And Paul says, no, he says, really, the Lord led me to you. And the Lord gave me an outreach among you. And as a matter of fact, I'd like to use you to reach even further. And again, how do I say this without missaying it? The Lord is in charge of people's ministries. And if someone is preaching to a congregation of 30 or 3,000, it's up to the Lord. And again, the 30-person pastor shouldn't be feeling inferior, and the 3,000 person, pastor, shouldn't be feeling superior. But they were thinking, Paul, you know, you came too far, you reached for too much. We would say perhaps in our day, you know, you just got a big head, Paul. And you're trying to do and be far more than you should have. My mother would have said to me, you're getting too big for your britches. Okay, those are the issues as far as they were concerned, and not all of them, but enough. Now, how about Paul, from Paul's perspective? And really, it's only one, and I've already said it, but I'll say it again here. Paul was disappointed in these folks in Corinth. I draw that because of the following texts, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of them. If there's any theme, if there's any one theme that kind of keeps popping up, it's this one. I'll give you the references, chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, and chapter 5, verses 11 and 12, and chapter 10, verses 12 and 13, and chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. Again, it's wow. And when you read those, and probably for the sake of honesty, I should read one of them anyway. Let's look at 12, 11 and 12 just for a moment. Seems like a lot of things come to a head near the end. Chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. I have become a fool in boasting. I guess I read this once, but that's all right. I have become a fool in boasting. You have compelled me. For I ought to have been commended by you. For in nothing was I behind the most eminent apostles, though I am nothing. Truly the signs of an apostle were accomplished among you, with all perseverance in signs and wonders and mighty deeds. Do you get what he's saying there? You know I'm a true apostle. You have seen me in action. You have experienced and observed even some miraculous things that I have done among you. That's what signs and wonders and mighty deeds refers to. Now he is saying, look, why didn't you come to my defense? Why didn't you? The key word is the word commend. It's a kissing cousin to our word recommend. You recommend people for various things. You know, you recommend them for a job, or you recommend them for, as a state rep, I recommended people to be a pastor. You recommend people because you know them and you trust them and you love them and you have some history with them. He said, you know, you folks know me. You know by personal experience I'm an apostle. But when these detractors came to town and started insulting me and questioning my motives and all that, instead of coming to my defense, you went along with them. And you forced me then to have to commend myself. So Paul was disappointed in their lack of love, their lack of friendship, and perhaps it was their lack of courage. I don't know exactly where that vacuum, that lack was. But Paul was very disappointed in them. And so he says to them, you forced me to defend myself. I've had to write all this down and boast in my weakness. We'll talk more about that. But that was Paul's disappointment. Finally, the last area of issue here. And that is his detractors, these folks, these false teachers. And I got to tell you, Paul was very rough on them. He did not mince words about them. I'm going to give you three or four references here. Chapter 10, verses 7 to 11. And chapter 11, verses 1 to 4. Again, chapter 11, verses 12 to 15. And also in chapter 11, verses 22 to 23. I'm not sure which one would be the best one to read here. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Chapter 11, verses 12 to 15. I'm not sure what's going to happen here. I'll start at verse 11, I think. I'm in 11. Why? Because I do not love you, God knows. But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. Now, those are rough words. But Paul is saying these people pretend to be ministers of righteousness, but really they are emissaries of Satan. Wow. And Paul is warning the Corinthians, you really ought not to attach yourself to those folks. You really ought not to buy hook, line, and sinker all that they're telling you. And you most assuredly should not turn your loyalty from me, the true apostle with the real gospel, to them, false apostles trying to lead you down the garden pathway doctrinally. Wow. So when we read 2 Corinthians, my friends, we are really reading something very heavy and something very serious and something which should cause folks like us to sit up and take notice, say, whoa, wait a minute. We better be careful who it is we're really following. And we better examine what we are being told, of course, in our day, according to Scripture. They didn't have all the Scripture that we have. And they didn't have all the modern communication things that we have. But we do. We do. Okay, the issues. I just wanted to kind of give you that big picture here. Finally, one last little thought here. Because it may not seem like this has anything to do with us, but it does. There are lots of ways to go in application, and I'm going to go one way, and honestly, it applies to me, perhaps even more than it applies to you. So I hesitate to do this, but here we go. If you really love somebody, you will come to their defense when they are attacked. Isn't that true? That is a hard truth. It's a level and a kind of love that we don't think about very much. When we think about love, we think of ooey-gooey, ishy-gwishy, nicey-nicey. We think maybe of providing, protecting, maybe caring for, serving, all of those words we associate with love, and rightly so. But there is a level, a degree of love in which when the object of your love is under attack, you come to their defense. That's what Paul was so disappointed in. There was a defect in the Corinthians' love for Paul. This just comes to me off the top of my head. We talk about the military. People in the military should be there because they love their country. And they are willing to defend and protect that country, even the laying down of their lives, because they love the United States of America. That's a simple illustration that when you love, you are willing to defend. Now, I know that not everyone in the military is there with that pristine motivation. I know that. But ideally, So when you say to your wife, I love you, that means there will be times when you need to come to her defense. When you say to your husband, I love you, there will be times when you will come to his defense. You know, almost naturally, I don't have to go far on this one, but parents with your children, when someone attacks your child, whether it's in school or work or whatever, there is something in the parent. You can't do that to my child. I will come to their defense because you love them. Are you with me? Are you sleeping out there? Are you okay? You're quiet. This last one then also is true. When someone attacks your pastor, if you love them, you come to their defense. Right? We all know that pastors are not perfect. We all know that. I was, but most aren't. You know. Just teasing. Just. It's getting a little heavy here. You see, Paul was disappointed because he thought that these folks were his friends and loved him and knew him. And they had experienced his ministry. And now when these detractors come along, they just kind of shut up and went on after them. Easy to do that, isn't it? Takes a degree of courage, a degree of knowledge, a degree of loyalty. I'm not talking here about blind loyalty or, you know. I think when I was a state rep, it was one of the most difficult things that I found I had to do and encourage other people to do. Often folks would have criticisms or gripes or disagreements with their pastor or other leaders. And I found that I needed to say, okay, you need to go talk to that person. I'll go with you. I'll listen. And I found a lot of times people weren't willing to do that. It was more like they just wanted to growl and criticize, but not resolve something. So if you take away anything from tonight, love defends. Think about that. Dear Lord, I thank you that you love us. You defend us from the accusations of Satan. Lord, help us to mature in our love beyond just the ishy-gwishy, ooey-gooey, but to the more difficult level of defense. Thank you for your word. I'm sure that when Paul penned this letter, it was an excruciating experience for him. And I think when the Corinthians got this letter and read it and thought about it, it was a tough read for them. But Lord, it's healthy for us. Help us to learn from it. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.